Welcome to the Ether. Today is Thursday, September 29th, 2022. Today on the Ether, part one of a three-part Chepi Space, a Cosmos open discussion. Let's take a listen.
Who's behind the traders mic today?
It's Pepe Sylvia. How are you doing?
Good, good. What's your name again?
Pepe Sylvia.
Pepe, okay, cool. I just didn't know who I was actually talking to.
Yeah, I'm the founder of Traders.
That's cool. Okay. So yeah, you had mentioned before over the weekend and such to like maybe catch up on ideas about a project and things that you guys are dreaming up. Is that right?
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm kind of already making some progress on it, but you had said in a post like, hey, you know, what are some ways we can kind of push decentralization across you know, all these different chains like Luna, Cosmos, Osmosis, you know, Juno, any of the above chains. And it's actually something I kind of had discussed in another space a while back with some other people from the Cosmos ecosystem. And I think the general idea, it's pretty straightforward, and it's to try and create like validator bundles and then create a like one-click user interface where it would spread out your stake across multiple validators. So the bundles could be something like, you know, maybe outside the top 25. So like maybe like you would create a bundle that said like the middle, you know, 25 validators or the middle 10 validators or something like that. So not the bottom 25, not the top 25, for example. And then it would delegate to those. So somebody who, you know, doesn't want to be delegating to the top or the bottom for the risks that are associated with the bottom, you know, they could one click delegate to just like a smattering in the middle. Or maybe you want to click to delegate to core contributors who are actually adding value to the chain with their, you know, their dev updates. We would have like a bundle that you would, you know, basically be able to click. You don't have to go out and research and like find all of these guys yourself. Like there would be a bundle that would say like, you know, these are validators run by core contributors. Click it, one click, stop, assign how much you want, and then it would add to that that kind of bundle. So that's kind
of, so where would you interface this on some sort of an application somewhere? You would do this on Kepler wallet? Like where do you envision this happening?
Probably through a website, sort of like Restake or one of those. So it would be a front end. It basically, you know, a front end UI. It would just be its own standalone website, similar to like Restake. Yeah, like I don't envision this being like instantly integrated into like Kepler wallet, for example. I mean, if those guys wanted to pick it up and take up that mantle, like I'm all for it. I've already worked with another dev. Essentially, it's pretty straightforward and simple to do to build out this like kind of back end stuff. So it's just we're going to build out the front end UI for now and you know give it a shot. I think it just kind of helps take the burden. I don't want to speak for everybody, but I know that there is some sort of a tendency of people to basically just like assign a lot of their, you know, stake in one bundle. Like they're not going to go through the process of like clicking, you know, it's delegating 10 different times to 10 different validators. So making it a one click option will, I think, facilitate some kind of decentralization of the network. And that's really the goal here.
Yeah. I mean, I've heard lots of different, excuse me a second, my car's making a racket here. 1 minute.
Are you back in the Walmart auto body shop?
Yeah, I had to get some inspection done.
Nice.
Yeah, 1 second. So what I was So what I was thinking about with these different plans is, so there's all these different reasons why people delegate, right? Some people will delegate because they just have the top name at the top of the list. Some people delegate with something because other people have. Some people will delegate because they have a specific validator that they're friends with or know, or, you know, have been recommended by somebody. You have some people that want to delegate based on uptime. Validators that like have a certain service, like, for example, let's say, for example, there's like a crypto influencer or some shit, like, and they make money off of that, and that's how they survive. So people have this like validator as a service model as well. Some people delegate to certain ones because certain airdrops are promised, like almost like a bribe type of thing. There's so many different things. And then on top of that, even if you create like a system where there's batches, my thought would be that you would either wind up having validators get delegations they don't deserve in some cases, but you also have the problem of validators that my point is like we wind up creating like perverse incentives in terms of the original intent of how voting was supposed to work and how delegations are supposed to work. So it's a really tricky problem. I don't think there's any great way to promote simultaneously decentralization and definitively prevent one validator from getting too big, almost no matter what you do. Also the discovery, like let's say you have these batches, like how are people going to know if the lay public barely knows like what to delegate to? Why would they know what website to go to do like a batch delegation to a group or something like that? You see what I'm saying? Like the discovery process of this website or this dApp to do this is another layer of friction or whatever. So it's really tricky.
Yeah,
I'm almost wondering like single whatever it is solution. If you have to promote decentralization, it would be somehow through the it'd have to be like mathematical and automated within the system. One argument that people made was, well, if there's a validator that's functioning properly, but it's near the bottom of the list, then the yield on that validator would be higher. So you kind of indirectly financially incentivize some of those lower validators. And I think some networks do that. I think maybe Elrond, I believe, might do something like that. You'll go on and like each of the validators has a slightly different yield rate to promote some delegations to some reasonable validators that, but you get incentivized with a little bit of extra money return, I guess. So I don't know. I'm not sure what the right answer is. But yeah, I think sites that like you described are probably going to be created. And I think Spark is doing a little bit of that. Spark IBC is trying to provide some like knowledge and training as far as what validators are doing what. People are creating like dashboards and stuff so you can see like what their uptime is or things like that. So anyway, but do you have someone working on a specific project?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's really a pretty simple backend thing. So it's the guy I'm working with, he already basically created it. Can you hear me?
I'm not sure if I'm talking to myself or not.
Hey, hold on.
Oh, there. He's reconnecting, I think. Hey, did you get disconnected?
Hey, yeah, I don't know.
How far in did you get disconnected?
Oh, I mean, I could hear you the whole time. Oh,
okay.
Talking, but you guys couldn't hear me. So.
Oh, I see. So you just broke.
Yeah.
That's cool.
So I was the one talking to myself over here. No, I mean, I think ultimately I don't envision this being like the one-off solution to decentralize the entire like network.
Yeah, it's just one more way to help.
It's just one more way, exactly. And I think that it's part of a building block of stuff. For example, other protocols that are maybe helping with staking could then like basically plug into that UI. Like maybe some of the liquid staking protocols could then like look at that. You go to liquid stake and it would basically then split up across like a set of validators using that kind of application. So it just kind of, I think, becomes a building block in there. You know, like take, for example, Stake Easy's or whatever it is, that new liquid staking protocol on Juno. Like if they were to go and access the like Juno bundle and create a bundle for themselves or something like that, where, you know, anybody who goes and assigns the liquid staking Juno, it would be split up across like 10 validators. That's where it's like it just becomes a building block and the whole thing. But yeah, to your point, it's not mathematical and it's not automated. So it's not going to individually solve the entire issue of decentralization. But it would kind of create a easier reference point for, like I said, who's a core contributor, who's maybe operating. Like if you really care about like increasing decentralization, maybe you really care about who's operating on like a bare metal node. So you don't want to have somebody who's operating on like Amazon Web Services as your validator. So, you know, those are sort of things where like if we were to create bundles, it would take that kind of impetus to do research to, you know, assign your delegation off of some of the users and provide another way to easily or more easily facilitate decentralization. So, I mean, yeah, if nobody uses it, I guess, you know, no harm, no foul. But it was just something that I was talking about, and it turns out it was pretty easy to do. So we're going to give it a shot.
Yeah, there's, I think some of the reasons why people delegate where they do is an artifact of the system, obviously. Like, you know, the whoever's on the top of the list, people just push the button and go for it for whatever reason. It's almost like a Amazon review or something. People just buy it based on that consensus. But I think, and then anything that I've looked at that involves like severely punishing larger validators, what happens is that incentivizes them to break into multiple validators, which again defeats the point of this anyway, because then it's like quasi decentralization. And it's actually maybe more obfuscated because then, you know, one validator creates, you know, five of them with different names, and they'll also end up kicking some validators out of the active set by doing that too, which also gets weird. So it actually makes the problem maybe substantially worse.
Yeah, I agree. Well, because then if that validator has an issue with where they're running their server out of, you then run into five validators that are all running into that same issue, for example.
Exactly. So, yeah, so those kind of like artificial tactics. On the other hand, there is an artificialness to like how people delegate. So some of the counterbalancing of that with other artificial methods, like you're describing, and by artificial, I mean, it's not a direct reflection of a person's vote. Like a lot of times people aren't delegating based on, you know, what type of values that delegator has. They're oftentimes delegating because they, you know, just it's whatever financial incentive they might have. But if you were to take that away and look at the ones that are voting just because the UI or UX tends to make them vote a certain way, that kind of thing could be countermanded with other types of artificial methods to randomize maybe the order of the validators on that list or some other thing that forces you to think twice about what you're validating with, I guess.
Yeah. The only problem I would say with the randomization is going back to your original point of like people getting delegations that they don't necessarily deserve. Like if you put some, excuse my language, but if you put some absolute shit trash validator just because of the randomization sequence,
you put them at the top
of the list,
they're getting free money.
Yeah. And then people aren't doing the research. They don't even know these guys and they're just clicking number one, assigning, then yeah, going back to your point of like giving people delegations that they don't necessarily like deserve, I guess it would be kind of like that also would be a case there. So
yeah, it's like the perverse incentives problem. And this is a general problem with delegated proof of stake networks. Like no one has exactly sorted out how to prevent some of these issues. And you can always go back to like democratic governments, where you have an executive branch, a judicial branch, you have not only one, but two branches of the legislative branch, like in the United States, like Senate and the Congress. You know, the Senate has one type of like voting arrangement, and the Congress has a different way they count votes depending on, you know, the number of delegations or whatever that you get as a congressman versus a senator. But that leads to different power struggles, because senators have a different type of benefit in terms of voting power, and then a congressman has a different style of level of voting power. And then the amount of money that goes to like senatorial elections versus, you know, congressional elections differs because of this difference in power. And then even in the executive branch, you have like on the presidential elections, you have, of course, like the general vote, the popular vote, and then you have the issue of the electoral college vote. Each of them have like different purposes to them, but every time the electoral college vote, as you know, doesn't go the way of a certain political party, then the other political party is like, oh, do away with it and stuff like this. And you know, but at the same time, no one has figured out how to prevent, let's say, you know, New York and California from winning all the elections from now until forever, unless, you know, your goal is that's what you want to have happen because you're of that political party, then obviously you're fine with it to some extent. So people are fine with tyranny as long as it's their tyranny. I don't know how to solve that on the actual governments haven't solved this problem. I don't know that there's a great way to solve it on a blockchain level. One theory I had was maybe like, you know, a hurricane, tsunami, or tornado has to like roll through and just sort of like automatically like punish some validators randomly, like almost like, and there needs to be some sort of randomization event, almost like sort of how living things, there's like periodically a meteor strike, there's a tsunami, there's an earthquake or some natural disaster that's truly random. And it sort of resets the, I don't know, the economy, it resets the, it resets the whatever the civilization, it resets biological systems, causing mass extinctions and stuff like that. So it might be that the only balancing force would be randomness itself, like some sort of like release of entropy, where these big validators, like one of the risks of being a mega validator ends up becoming, you know, that there is some sort of like negative risk that you accrue. The only problem with that is, again, you wind up just splitting validators apart if they feel like it's in their best interest. So yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure what the right answer is. They're like, life figures out a way usually, but in living systems, it's usually really, really catastrophic, right? Like, in other words, an entire species dies or whatever. So maybe that's what has to happen in blockchain world, is that periodically a chain just dies because of centralization. And then others that are more decentralized sort of make it, and then it just keeps going and going like this, like an evolutionary process. Although people don't like to say that about their money, because if their money is on a chain, they don't want something to happen to it, obviously.
I mean, yeah, I wouldn't wish for chain death to be the only way to kind of move forward. That's definitely... it's no fun. having gone through that once, essentially, with Luna. I mean, not because of necessarily centralization, but just because of, you know, a massive.
Although to some extent, I would argue that it was due to centralization. The reason why, one of the big reasons why, like the thing that gave me like butterflies in my stomach was when Terraform Labs, which owned like I think 55% of all the Luna, right? That's not even including whatever is in the pockets of some of the big owners like Doe or somebody else. It might have been, who knows, it might have been like 60% centralized or more. The problem with that was, remember when they started selling some of the Luna that was in the TFL wallet with this idea of creating like LFG and all this stuff? Remember that? So as soon as you started like dumping funds into the market,
general sales.
Yeah, yeah. It would just say anything that's in the central wallet was a risk vector for some sort of like calamity, essentially. And you know, like the minute I started getting a bit like I kind of brushed that under the rug in my mind for quite a while, even though people argued that it's one of the most centralized L1s. But what really started giving me butterflies in my stomach was when they decided to start spending that, right? And like my sense was that Terra needed to be like a, you know, like a $500 billion blockchain before you started like messing with like the team tokens. And even then you might have been better to go full Satoshi and just burn the entire TFL wallet, right? That would have been a much more sort of bullish case for the system. And we probably wouldn't have had what happened instead of selling tokens in there to try to form LFG, like dramatically increasing the collateral value of Luna by destroying most of those team tokens probably would have made a big difference in preventing the situation that is, because then like you would have decimated a lot of the available short positions. You would have like it would have created a narrative. It would have created a decentralization narrative. And you, I think you would have had like more people investing at the right time. And instead what happened is like the opposite happened. They used some of their team funds. And the moment that started happening, then what, like the moment people start selling team funds, then the hedge funds and everybody else are like going to be like, wait a minute, like these people are starting to dump on us. You know, fuck this, we're out of here. And then, of course, like you precipitate the very collapse that you think you're trying to avoid with using those funds. So, yeah, I don't know. Like that was the first thing that gave me butterflies in my stomach. And I should have taken that with a greater degree of like warning in my mind, but I didn't. I let things drop a lot more before I was able to sort of exit from that system. But yeah, centralization, you know, is going to be dissipated as some sort of like major entropy event. And it's a high risk if any blockchain gets a certain size. So what'll happen, man, is like, think about, I don't know, let's say any of the Cosmos chains, if any of them become sufficiently centralized enough, then what happens is that other hedge funds and other companies or individuals who want to invest in that chain, they start to think twice about it. Why? Because, you know, wait, like what if these people, you know, in this all in the centralized validator set or otherwise, what if something happens to the validator? What if something happens to like they vote for something crazy and cause chaos in the chain? What if, you know, like a centralized pool of money, team tokens, whatever, why would I want to be dumped on? I want to be the smart money, not the dumb money at the top. So what happens is that over time, the more centralized it becomes, I think it's a self-fulfilling prophecy that it causes, like you can cause chain death just by simply like detracting from newcomers from showing up. Does that make sense? Like I think there's it's a self-fulfilling narrative in some ways that you have to like have decentralization. Otherwise it's done for you by chain death, I think.
Yeah, no, I'm totally there with you on that. I think there's two different like kind of sides to that decentralization. Obviously, like you were saying, there's the portion of the tokens which is owned by, you know, team wallets or large holder wallets. And, you know, I guess that is in itself, like you have to decentralize that, but then there's also the stake that they have with the validators. So you could have one holder who owns a ton and spreads it out across the whole network, but still has massive voting power themselves, you know, within the kind of the ecosystem because of their like size of their bag. And then by comparison, you know, you could have just like a few validators. And I know there's a few chains out there that have like the top validators have a massive portion of the, I think, what chain was it? I can't remember. There was something that was like, yeah, you had like four validators that could block the other, like, you know, 100 and something on one of these chains the other day. I saw something, somebody complaining about that. I think it was Luna Classic, I want to say, but correct me if I'm wrong there.
Where a small number of validators can basically override the vote of all the rest.
Yeah, I think that was something. Yeah. I think that was something about the Luna Classic, like redelegating vote or something like that. There was like the top validators had so much power that the rest of them, so it was like the top 4, 5, 10, whatever it was, like they overpowered the other 130 because of the stake that they had with them.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, nobody minds as
long as chain that returns it has a central validator. Now, what do you mean by too centralized? That's what I'm trying to get at. What do you mean by this? What are you trying to imply?
We don't know, Jimmy. Maybe you could clarify what's too centralized in your mind.
I don't know. I would like to ask him first what he means by that. It's a very big... Yeah, I'm talking to you. Who do you think I'm talking to? There's only three people on the speaker stage, man.
Jimmy. No,
I wanted to answer what he meant by that. I mean, he's just throwing things out there, hoping it sticks. Can you explain and define what you meant by that?
I don't think I meant anything super specific by it. I was just...
Why did he say it then?
We're in a Jimmy, spaces, leave him alone. Man. I don't exactly Jesus have Christ. A script.
Get on your meds before you get on the spaces.
I'm not on anything, Steve Pye, but when someone comes and has nothing to say but still talks, I can't understand why. He just Jimmy, admitted Jimmy. He was very vague, right? Am I listening to some ghost out there that is speaking in Norwegian? He just admitted to speaking in extremely vague, broad terms, right, about so-called decentralization. I would like to ask him.
They are very broad, vague terms.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and say they are kind of vague terms. There's not really like a super... super defined here, like what that exactly means, what the threshold for decentralization is. If you know the definition, go ahead and say it.
I would like to ask you, so you admit you don't know what the thresholds are, but yet you are criticizing chains for meeting said threshold that you cannot define.
All I said, to quote myself here, is that I believe, and I literally didn't even say, I said, I believe there was a chain recently which had a small set of validators.
Yeah, it's Polygon.
They were able to block.
What happened with Polygon, right? Jimmy?
Well, they have a central validator. It's four validators. They can block the rest to stop spam attacks.
For spam attack prevent, yeah.
Well, so, they had a lot of spam attacks back in the day. You know, people were basic because it has relatively cheap fees. And there was a lot of market making and basically over-exaggerated liquidity. So you could see their volume numbers basically got sliced by half when they implemented this.
You think there's a solution for the spam problem that doesn't involve centralization necessarily, or such a thing doesn't exist?
That's a complicated one. You know, I think the philosophy behind blockchains kind of offered only two major solutions for this. The first one are fees being changed and being elastic, basically higher fees, or, you know, basically a central validator. And proof of stake chains to stop spam attacks. At the time, Polygon was relatively small too. This is like maybe a year ago. It's hard to do it unless you're on the scale of Ethereum and there's a lot of validators able to suss out where the spam's coming from. Apparently, it took them 2 months to figure out where it was coming from. It was apparently some trader basically doing a lot of arbitrage liquidity spam trading, essentially. He was manipulating.
It wasn't even malignant necessarily. It was just sort of.
Well, it's a symptom of malignancies of Polygon. They were the first, you know this very well, they're the first non-ETH chain to have very, very low fees and still have a lot of NFTs.
Yeah, yeah. So basically just the function of having low fees, it creates this drama.
Now there are, you know, evolving solutions to it. That's kind of why ETH has this weird set of layers and validators, nodes, and so forth. But for the most part, you know, Solana has slashing, right? Where basically validators get the reward slashed. You know, if the chain is basically under a spam attack, you know, that's a Sybil attack, Sybil attack. And that happens a lot with Solana, at least it did back in the day, like 3 months ago, 2 months ago, 4 months ago as well, 6 months ago too. It went down for 3 days.
It's almost like in regular countries and governments, you know, the way I look at it as well, if you have a right to bear arms, then the individuals prevent against like an invasion of a country. And then on the other hand, like you have central organizations, like for example, a central military, which might house like anything from, you know, missiles to nuclear weapons to whatever the hell. And like, so there's a centralized defense system ultimately, and both have like slightly different impacts in terms of the overall.
Well, I think the issue with a lot of smaller chains is the fact that their validators are not rewarded enough to scale the chain when there is a spam attack, so that they add more legitimate validators And their incentive structure is not strong enough, right? So, I mean, how much do validators really make? If they would add, let's say, everyone adds three additional servers, right? What's the incentive for this? You're still getting the same rewards if you're getting delegated, right? So that system doesn't work. Then Avalanche has their subnet system, which
so you're saying weird. That validators aren't incentivized to provide enough
when like the spam attacks are being coordinated to defend against. Yeah,
yeah, that's a good point. Have you seen a system like, or you're about to mention Avalanche, but have you seen a system do this really well?
No,
like any system that you're really impressed with that maybe they're onto something.
No, I mean Avalanche has their own system, but don't forget each of those subnets, they're not actually compatible with the other subnets. So yeah, like, I mean, if this Chainlink is on C-Chain, which is the main chain of Avalanche, Chainlink does not work on the UFK chain or Submarine chain.
Yeah, I mean, like, do you think this? I mean, this is pretty much the original argument, the sort of like Satoshi argument, like that no matter what you create, it's going to get fucked up by people.
Well, Satoshi, you know, he knew that the biggest issue was greed, and essentially when I don't think he was predicting proof of stake chains. It's unclear what he really meant by this. But when he was arguing that validators are not trustworthy enough to be honest, you know, the Byzantine general problem, right? You cannot actually trust a large number of validators to basically respond correctly when the situation comes, right? So this means that you have to have an incentive mechanism. So their incentive mechanism under Satoshi was mining, but he never mentioned mining pools. I don't think he ever thought that there'd be mining pools. He just mentioned that work involves mining, and in proof of stake, work involves basically running up a $20 node. But whether or not the reward of that $20 node is worth it. So in Ethereum 2.0, the incentive is that you stake Ethereum. So why would you basically fork a network whereby you're staking so much Ethereum, it would hurt your original stake? And the issue with most smaller chains, actually not most, all of them, is that most of their coins are in Binance or KuCoin, right? So most of their activity is on those chains, right? They're on wallets, right? And those exchanges essentially have the control over those tokens. And yet, most of the time, those chains don't even stake their tokens in the sense of delegating it correctly. So when there's a governance vote, right, they may stake the tokens, but they never vote with the tokens. And right. Imagine Binance has a committee of people, which they don't, by the way, this is a joke, but had a committee of people that whenever a governance proposal went up on any of these chains, and there's like how many fucking proof of stake chains are on Binance now? 100? They have a committee of going, philosophically, we are in favor of this governance proposal, but you know, we're not going to vote because we're going to be neutral because we're Binance. No, they just don't care. And they have a huge bag of these tokens, right, that people just leave on their wallets in Binance. And if you added up all the centralized exchanges, it'd probably be 40 to 50% of each chain's total circulating supply. That's how bad that situation is. That's really the issue.
Not good.
That's the core of the issue. The core of the issue is in terms of incentives. No one can actually change the incentives to respond fast enough when a spam attack actually happens. So Polygon's response was to create the centralized validators.
Yeah, and I've been wondering about this too, that maybe the solution to like the universe of decentralization is that maybe you don't fight this idea. Maybe the idea is that at a chain level, each chain is technically centralized, but the way you technically decentralize would be having lots and lots of different.
That's exactly the layer
variety, two. A wide variety of centralized exchanges, essentially, or wide variety of centralized chains. You decentralize through sheer numbers, not necessarily through at a chain level. Maybe it's not possible. It's mathematically
just define what Ethereum 2.0 is.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, I think maybe
Optimism is not decentralized. Optimism is a highly centralized project. Arbitrum doesn't even have tokens. So it's literally a company. It's literally an LLC. You have no voting power over.
Yeah, exactly. No, in the sense that, like, like biological systems sort of do this. You know, at a local level, like a beehive is super centralized, but then you have lots and lots of different beehives, right? So each of them survived because of sheer numbers, not necessarily because one might not get destroyed. The concession is that one could get destroyed, and then that decentralization happens through diversity and sheer volume and numbers.
Well, I think the issue is not that. The issue in terms of complexity is evolution, right? So it's either Darwinian or Mankarian. And I would argue that when you have that kind of structure, and this is the issue of Theory 2.0, the Darwinian evolution, how does it come, right? So when there's a problem on Ethereum, some layer twos, people don't use them, but they've staked their tokens. So do they die? But if it's supposed to work, their token value still goes up with their staked tokens, correct? They're not making that much in fees, right? And those fees are being burned, correct? So where's the evolution of the individual layer twos? Like, where is this, you know, Schumpeterian, like Joseph Schumpeter's idea of destruction of basically a failing businesses? Where does this happen?
Yeah.
The creative destruction, guys, where is that, the layer twos? Because if most of the layer twos work, doesn't that also mean the other bad layer twos work?
Yeah, I guess we were just arguing about this before you came on, that like theoretically that happened with Luna. Like the moment the team tokens got moved, hell started breaking loose, right? You could almost like pin it back to that moment where the centralized token quantity was just too large. And the moment you started
I think it's just separate what happened with Luna with what happens with Ethereum. The difference is
it's two different things.
Luna had control of the wallet too. So that would be true if the Ethereum Foundation had control of the layer twos and the wallet of the Ethereum Foundation and the wallet to the staking, right? So in a sense, Doquan was actually managing a vast asset management company with very little risk oversight, no compliance, and no one was basically in charge of portfolio theory. He was running the wallet for the defending the PEG, right? And he was running the collateral of the Luna. So that's two different things. The non-Luna collateral, which is one wallet, which he was supposed to build up. Then the actual collateral of the Luna itself. And then he was running the bad debt side, which is the outstanding UST balance for holders on Anchor and other staking platforms. So, because, you know, Anchor was, you know, centralized. Anchor was essentially, you know, the Luna Foundation. Right. So he was running three different asset management businesses.
Yeah. I mean, there's any number of mistakes that could have been made.
Now, if Ethereum Foundation had both the stablecoin, the collateral, the staking wallet, and they had, you know, then you would be the same, they'd be equivalent situation. It's not, though.
Hey, Crypto Mogul, what's up?
I don't like that guy.
Mogul, what's going on? You there?
Yep. See?
Oh. I don't know. Maybe his mic's not working. Sometimes when you enter these things, the mic doesn't work.
You give too much leeway to these people. Which, by the way, when I said that, I was accused of saying things against one ethnicity. This person said, "What do you mean by these people?" His PFP was a rat with an exploding hat, and I was unsure what he meant by this. Then he began accentuating his Ebonic accent heavily when he repeated the phrase, "What do you mean by these people?" I was like, you know, the people in the audience, these people. It's like, oh, cannot say that. You know, and then he went on to his little thing and he removed me.
It's funny.
Funny, anyway, but true.
I don't know what happened to Mogul's mic, but if you're trying
to, I think
to
say they're scared.
You might have to drop off scared and then come back because this thing sometimes breaks. Let me just remove him. Yeah, sometimes you have to log off your
Twitter. Remove him permanently. Get him out,
and then come back. But anyway, yeah. Anyone have any other like interesting things happening? Combo.
No one has anything interesting to say. What could they possibly say?
What do you have interesting that might be going on, Jimmy, lately?
I wouldn't call it interesting. I was responding to your questions.
I would say anyone that is attempting to say that they have something interesting, be very aware, because for the most part, and I'm sure, as you know, no one can predict the future. I'm sure, as you know, I'm seeing less and less NFT spaces where they're predicting that the NFTs would go up in price. Every day there's less of them, which is a good thing. And of course, I'm seeing far less proof of stake chains doing any marketing. Most of these teams have lost most of their members because they can't pay them anymore.
Massive drop off in activity.
Uptick in layoffs.
Has there been? I don't know how the industry looks right now with that.
Well, there's one chain where they laid off 3 of their core team members in one day yesterday, and they've laid off 25 in the total of the last 3 months, and they only have 40. So at this rate, they won't have anyone left. What does this DeFi Todd want? I know this man.
Hey Todd,
I know this man.
Hey, what's up?
He's no good.
I was just cruising through spaces. Should I say what's up, Jimmy? What's going on, man?
I don't know you.
You don't know me? Are you not a Safe Moon soul?
No.
Jimmy periodically needs like a swift kick to the nuts.
CFI, may I ask, why is someone shilling Safe Moon in this space? This is a Cosmos space. Get him out of here.
I will leave.
Get him out. He has nothing to contribute.
I just wanted to say hi.
You said it.
Okay, bye, Jimmy. See you later.
Okay.
All right, Todd. Good. Thanks for dropping by. hey, Mayor, what's up?
Hey, hello, Seffy. Hey, I'm doing all right. I'm doing all right, considering, you know, the world's on fire. I think...
the world's not on fire. Don't exaggerate.
The 10-year treasury is going to go to 5%, and, you know...
Oh, my God. Did you know it has been historically at 5% for the last 30 years?
It has?
Yeah, you should go look at a chart.
no.
Let me think about that. When you open up that chart and you see how that line from the 2-year to the 5-year to the 10-year, it kind of goes up, but the only time where it didn't was basically the thing known as the inverted one. That was a time they did QE and printed money out of nowhere, and were basically buying all the mortgage-backed securities left and right. And sometimes they were buying it from themselves, right? Because they're also buying the same mortgage-backed securities from the Department of Housing as well, right? And Fannie and Freddie. Correct. So literally they're buying it from themselves. That's when the curve inverted, right? And the 10-year started dropping off a lot. So now it's going back to this thing it's called normal.
Mm.
Yes. Normal.
So yeah, I think the S&P 500 is going to crash. It's all going to crash, and I think Bitcoin's going back to like $4,000 US dollars per Bitcoin. So I think everyone
You're thinking epic clusterfuck.
So hold on. So when someone says this, may I ask, when you say this, why don't you buy puts on the S&P 500? If you really believe that, why don't you buy puts on the S&P 500 and have picks? Because I am sick and tired of people complaining and panicking about how bad things will be, but never actually proving their worth of their words
by having an actual financial trade. I don't like calls and puts. I don't like doing that option stuff.
Shorts. Then short the market. Then
you could short
you
it
can
all.
Buy a short ETF. CPI, he can buy a short S&P 500 ETF. You know that 1X, 2X, and 3X.
You're right. I can short it 3X, and I could ride the S&P down all the way to 3,000. And
why don't you do that then if you really believe it?
Or are you just
basically blowing
easy wind out
in the air?
I believe it, Jimmy. I'm going to do it. I'm going to make $50,000, and I'm going to donate it to my favorite Feed the Gorillas, Feed the Rhinoceros Foundation. I'm going to make 50,000 USA.
When you have that pick, and you have both the pick of the beginning and the pick of, let's say, 2 weeks from now, I will personally donate $10,000 to this stupid charity.
Feed the Gorillas? Okay.
Sure.
All right. So I'm going to short the S&P 500 down to 3,000. I'm going to make about 25-40K, and then I'm going to donate it to Save the Rhino.
You already said that. You're feeding yourself now. It's like we can hear you.
Okay.
We can hear you, right? And it's recorded too. So if we're really bored, we can also hear you two times.
The world's not on fire. We're going to save the rhinos. Got it. Okay.
I didn't say that.
Well, you said you would match. You said you would match when I show you confirmation of my traits. So.
Okay. Continue on. Do you have anything else to say?
I heard this neat conference had just taken place down in Medellin, Colombia. And I was wondering if anyone had any comments on some of the highlights of that conference. I got to watch a little bit of day one. I did not watch that much of day two and day three. I've been very busy feeding my llamas in the backyard. They are very hungry. So now that I have the llamas fed, I'd like to know more information what happened at Cosmoverse. Does anyone have
any information? Before we jump to that, NDA, did you have any other questions about the current discourse?
Kind of. I was just curious if you guys have ever heard of Playboy Man Baby and their NFT line that's on Cosmos. If not, I'm posting a video up top. I'd highly recommend you guys watching. It is amazing.
Playboy Man Baby.
Correct.
Don't buy any NFTs regarding anything that has to do with anatomy.
No, but seriously, take a listen to this video. It's amazing right now. And you're speaking to a celebrity by the name of Jimmy.
Ooh. I don't know about that, but all I know is be careful with this market.
He's a fucking genius, I tell you. If anybody wanted to ride anybody's dick, it would have to be Jimmy's dick.
Mm-hmm. It'd be a long ride. I don't know this video. I've never seen it in my life.
Can we get back to
Cosmoverse?
I think the couple of things that I saw that were interesting to me were obviously the adjustments to sort of like what's happening with Adam. I can't claim to understand all of the things that were in the various white paper elements, or for that matter, exactly how that's going to play into sort of like value accrual in the long run. It's an interesting direction, and I think we won't really know how popular the features of Adam 2.0 are going to be regarding everything from interchain security to everything else. So I think there's a lot of unknowns as far as how popular all those features will be. I think the teams obviously have some idea about what has worked and what hasn't in the Cosmos. So it's almost like you're trusting in whatever ideas the team has. So a lot of ambitious ideas there. And then I think the USDC coming to its own chain via Circle. I think if you're into stable coins, or at least centralized stable coins, you're a fan of USDC for whatever reason. That makes a lot of sense, and it's an unbridged system with a direct issuance, which I think is a lot safer than a lot of the bridged bullshit we've had to deal with. So if there's an IBC-compatible USDC that can go to any chain on Cosmos, that's really cool. And I think that would make it a lot easier to get money in and out of Cosmos. It will make it a lot easier to set up trading platforms of all types. Yeah.
So that was like the two big announcements, the restructuring, interchain security, Adam 2.0, and then the USDC as a stable coin. Now, as far as the USDC, I just briefly saw a couple announcements. The ICF or, the Cosmos devs are going to create a unique chain specifically for USDC to do you know much about it? Was I reading that?
I don't know if like that's going to be something managed by the Circle Foundation. I don't know if that's a daughter chain of Cosmos Hub that uses the interchain security system to kind of work.
That's what I understood them to be doing. That they were going to set up a consumer chain that was going to use interchain security.
Yeah, cool. Oh, I think Crypto Mogul might have his mic working now. Go ahead, man. Are you able to come on?
Never liked that guy.
I'm not sure if his microphone's working.
I would say it's unnecessary to create their own chain, anyway. To be honest. But it is what's popular.
Yeah, for Circle to make their own chain.
No, I don't think Circle is a foundation. By the way, I think it's just a company. But yeah, I don't think it's necessary. They could implement it directly. They don't need
to. Yeah, they could do it directly through osmosis, right? That's why makes sense to me. Yeah, it's just, but
I'm not a big fan of osmosis, but they could do that, sure.
There was discussion about it happening through osmosis previously. And I think,
I mean, all that a direct implementation really means is there is the vault, and then because it's IBC, if there's a trustless transfer, and like it happened in Solana, which is also Rust based, it's the same thing. It just is compatible with the rest of the IBC chains. That's all there is. There's nothing special about it.
Really. And you don't,
Solana is Rust, and they implemented it on Solana, 9 months ago?
Yeah, the specialty feature is just the lack of another intermediary in between or a bridge, which I think is the security problem.
It was implemented in Avalanche directly. So,
yeah.
USDC was trustlessly implemented before. I think it is more secure, though, by having more IBC chains, certainly.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So yeah, those are the two big announcements coming out of the conference. I mean, the rest of it was all liquid staking, you know, and all the different protocols got to get up there. I'm still interested in you know, following up on a little bit more. From what I understand, there was a little bit of, I mean, it's great that they pulled off the conference in the middle of this bear market, and I think it just shows there's a lot of activity and there is still a lot of interest in the cosmos.
They made a lot of money. Don't you think they have the ability to do that?
Yeah
to pull, well, they off literally dumped down retail like 5 times. So you know, osmosis is consistently dumped on retail. I'm sure they are not hurting for cash.
Yeah,
really, did you have to think about that? The guy who founded it is 23 and has a mansion.
I don't know about that. I don't know about that, Jimmy.
Like, you look him up. His name is Sonny.
I know.
And he has a mansion.
Okay. I'm sure.
Where did he get the money from?
Well,
yeah, I've got a question. Just to shift a little bit. I've been, I'm curious your guys' thoughts about Say protocol or Say chain.
SEI?
Yeah.
I know it. Yeah, what about it?
Well, I'm sort of curious about what you think about it, just as a trading chain, but also curious about. I heard them talking with Grover, and also the founder of I think it's UXD, which is a decentralized stablecoin, and they seem to have a pretty interesting protocol. Anybody know about that combination of, is it Vortex?
Vortex was originally a Forex trading platform on Terra. And what happened was two things. They're an Australian startup that got going last year around.
Vertex and Vortex are two different things.
Yeah, yeah.
Vertex. Oh, did he say Vertex? Yeah, Vertex, right?
Vertex was what Jimmy's talking about. There's a Terra protocol that was kind of.
Wait, Vortex, which one did he say? Vortex or Vertex?
VOR, Vortex on Say Network.
That's wait, did you just say Vortex is?
I did. And so what I'm saying is that. No, it's okay. It's Vortex. And I do know that Retrograde morphed and integrated, you know, into a new project called Vortex. And then I heard a dialogue that Say was hosting that included Vortex, but included the founder of UXD. And I'm curious about it because the guy sounded really cool and really smart. And it seems like they've got something building over on Say as a trading central place. And I'm curious what people know.
I would say this about SEI, you know, first off, it's hard to remember these names because there's also a layer one called SUI. So you know what? They got to start getting some name generators out there because it's all starting to sound the same. But in terms of what they're building isn't that unique, to be very honest. Although their marketing team's quite strong. And, you know, to be honest, the only thing that really matters is business development, right? most of the chains are basically the same thing. They're all built like Cosmos. And they really can't do much more than each other anymore, right? So if you have good business development, if you're actually a professional team, I think that you could go places. Most of the chains on Cosmos are very unprofessional, you know? So, and most of the other layer ones are exceedingly unprofessional. They're just a bunch of nobody lowlifes who got rich. They live in SF, and they went from homeless tent to WeWork. And they were able to contract out a lot of their blockchain stuff by getting some foolish VC money. Foolish money, you know, not honest money. Foolish money, okay? And that is what created a lot of these chains. I mean, literally one of the guys who left one blockchain, I don't want to say his name, was a goat farmer before he was a head of marketing for that chain. I mean that. He was a goat farmer in the United States. He has long dreads. He's a white guy. And he looks like he's perpetually high all the time. This is the state of blockchain. So I would say SEI in the next 3 years, so as long as they don't burn through things, because that's really the issue, is the burn rate. They could be important. Sure. You know, this is the issue of so many chains. They're bankrupt right now. They are literally bankrupt. They're basically laying off all their non-essential staff and just trying to keep their servers running.
Jimmy, I've heard that criticism of Cosmos before about the unprofessionalism, and I think it was
I'm not talking about Cosmos. I'm talking about, you know, like Harmony, for example, mm-hmm. talking about Juno, for example.
In general, there's some
Cello,
shit going on.
SELO would be another example. IOTA would be another example. I mean, I could go down the list. I mean, IOTA had some serious drama back in the day. I mean, they fired the entire core team, and only one of the core founders was allowed to remain. He fired everyone. He basically pushed them out of the company slash blockchain.
But yeah, when you hit on the business development, I think that's...
Zilliqa would be another example.
Yeah.
They had some massive drama back in the day. They're completely unprofessional. They're very young. They're too young, to be honest. I mean, these people who run Osmosis are also extremely unprofessional. And they had these issues and it really, you know, remember what happened, right? Where they're mistakenly printing money, essentially, and they weren't really fessing up to it until people basically told them. The best teams out there are, you know, Aave, Chainlink. They're these OG projects, but the teams are quite professional in the sense that they are able to get VC money in. They are able to maintain a stable burn rate. They don't hire their friends. They have essential staff. They have products that come out on time with a roadmap. And then they have events where they explain their vision on things that are actually achievable, right? That is what a tech startup is supposed to do, by the way. And eventually they start making real revenue. So for example, you know, Uniswap does make revenue. There aren't that many out there. But most of these chains are entirely reliant on highly speculative, volatile tokens to support themselves, with their ridiculously high cash burn. VeChain, for example, has four engineers, and they have a treasury of $1.2 billion. That'd be a good example of a very professionally run layer one, although, of course, they do have their issues. So, you know, this is really the problem. SEI, will it work? They are new. They are new, and they market well. But you know this very well, Mayor. Chains that market well are often the most suspicious, right? Be after the marketing wears off, and when they start really going through their cash burn, and they only have a certain amount left, they have to keep on promising their community things to maintain the price of the token, to sell the token, to fund themselves.
Yeah.
And how long can they do that?
Networks just,
they don't actually deliver
order
product.
Book. It's an open order book chain that's going to be super fast. That's
what they say.
Yeah.
I think if you can achieve on the dream of like an open order book while maintaining speed and scalability, I think that's a good product market fit. Again, whether it actually happens or not, is it all remains to be seen.
Walk back. Not that. Whether or not their token is actually connected to the success of that project is the real issue.
Well, that's another issue. Yeah.
Well, no, it's not another issue. It's the first issue. It's the first principle. Whether or not there are many projects that have achieved their goals, but the token itself is so disconnected from the actual project, because a circulating supply basically explodes and the fees that are burned are so low, right? It doesn't really increase the value of the token, and the staking isn't high enough. Well, I mean, these the stake rewards are not consistent enough to basically reward long-term
holders. Crypto in general, most of the price action coins is more.
So I'll give you some examples. 0x would be one example of that, right? 0x.
Yeah.
I'm sure you remember 0x. They're successful, very successful, aggregator / DeFi project. And the one of the most successful by far. Very old too. Got started in 2016-17. But the token has nothing to do with 0x because the fees generated by 0x are so incredibly small, but the amount of tokens that are actually earned are very low. So old 0x holders have seen the price decline by 95% and never got any value from it, right? And the 0x tokens continue to print and print and print.
Yeah.
You can have the most successful project out there with the world's worst tokenomics if you have to wait long enough. Right.
Yep.
The longer you wait for the product to be delivered, the worse the tokenomics eventually get.
Hey, Jack, how are you doing?
Hey, Seth.
I don't like that Jack guy.
Jimmy, stop it.
Jimmy, you don't like me? What did I do? What did I do, Jimmy?
Hey, Jack, we're talking about business development and some levels of professionalism in different chains. And I'd like to get your take on, I mean, Cosmosverse seemed pretty successful to me. It seemed like there was a lot of interest. What are your thoughts on the last couple of days?
I've got a ton of FOMO. Like, it seemed great. You know, I've been working on the USDC announcement for the last like 3 or 4 months. Strangelove's going to be doing the implementation there. I am very active in BD within IBC. So it's a lot of stuff that I was aware of. Like, I'm pretty stoked about Atom 2.0. And the alignment of the core contributors in the ecosystem. I think that that's hugely bullish, not only for Atom, but also for IBC. So yeah, I guess those are kind of my first high level thoughts.
Jack, a couple of questions. On the Atom side, the design of the system as proposed, like who are we incentivizing exactly with the new changes? Like who would want to say, for example, create a consumer chain? Why would they do it, and like how big of a thing is that in terms of bringing value back to Atom? Like what is the teams or the folks that you've talked to, like what is their intuition on this?
Yeah, you know, I think that like Polkadot built an entire ecosystem around this idea. We have decided to go the sort of route of enabling interoperability first and then sort of building in value capture. The way that I look at the market for security is a lot very similar to the way I think about the sort of gradient between serverless computing, where you just have a little bit of code and you go deploy it on AWS, down to an IaaS or infrastructure as a service, where you're running on a virtual machine on AWS, all the way down to sort of like running your own servers. That is the sort of spectrum of sovereignty within traditional web applications. Now, if you're thinking about that same thing in, and there's like a few steps I missed there, and like it's definitely a spectrum. There's not like three concrete things, but those are the sort of ends of the spectrum. If you think about something like the blockchain world, you've got smart contracts that are the least sovereign. You've got a ton of platform risk you're relying on. The rest of the chain, as well as their assets. Something like a roll-up or an interchain secured zone is somewhere in the middle. And then running your own chain with your own consensus and your own validator set is the sort of most sovereign. Applications fit all along that continuum. And there's a relatively underserved, like right now the smart contract market is overserved, and Cosmos already has the sort of like build your own consensus market. That's our market. You know, we the most new chains that are like coming online, if you're going to spin them up, probably have Tendermint or probably have the Cosmos SDK. And that middle market is sort of what we're going to start going after with interchain security on the hub. Polkadot has built a very successful business model off of this. There's a lot of prior art.
When can someone respond to this stuff?
What's up? Jimmy, go for it. Tell me how I'm wrong. Please tell me why you hate me.
I didn't say that. I said I dislike you. But so first up, I'd like to comment that usually in these spaces, when the core devs comes on the space, the host side's on the core devs side immediately. So there's almost no discussion. Should I say that for the record?
I should cut. Jack off at the ankles, maybe like at the Achilles tendon, maybe, like maybe put him in a hospital.
No, I think that. So I don't know what that meant. I think that was supposed to be an attempt at humor, but the real issue is this. So there's kind of a twofold issue. The first issue is that Jack is believes in his mind that he's talking to Cosmos token holders, in a sense, right? So he is giving you what you want to hear. He has the script, which he has rehearsed many times before, and these are the same things that he would say to any group of people come up to him and ask him the same kind of question, right?
Sure.
So the marketing play is there. That's fair enough. I understand that is the marketing play. However, let's be honest. Jack, you and your team have done a terrible job in many things. So, for example, the Cosmos brand, you just take some small examples, having a so-called lock on the interchain security market, right? Well, okay, yes, people use Cosmos SDK. People use the Cosmos SDK. That is well known. But that in itself doesn't deliver the token value. So if we were the board, or if we were just at a stockholders meeting, it wouldn't be so nice, right? We would ask about the tokenomics of this, which is really what I think CPI was getting at. Because you think he was really asking about the tokenomics of it. He wasn't asking about these marketing gimmicky terms, which you basically banded about and constantly use, by the way, because people like long techno babble terms. Again, this is not CNBC where you'd pay for airtime.
Yeah,
right?
But Jack
people are genuinely interested on the tokenomic side burn.
Jimmy, who do you think I work for?
You work for yourself.
Yeah.
Ultimately, you're trying to improve the Jack the brand.
So I've been very open about this. What I am trying to do is improve IBC adoption.
No, you're not. You work for yourself. Stop it. Stop the marketing gimmicks.
Well, you can disagree with me. That's fine. But I've spent a lot of money to prove otherwise. So you can
you've been
to
paid
disagree
and you've
me.
Made
that's
a lot
totally
of money
fine.
Too, my friend.
Just I'm let sure him
also,
say, you know,
I've,
let him
also
speak.
I've also invested significantly within the ecosystem and spent substantially the last 5 years of my life on this. So there is a little bit of a difference.
Yeah, and Jack is not claiming that anyone's created a perfect system with absolutely perfect
I hadn't really finished, but I think so beyond the terms that are banded about, right? So marketing is fine. And not talking about the tokenomics, okay, fine. You know, even though it'd be nice to talk about, which is really you have to admit, CPI, Ethereum 2.0 was really a question about the tokenomics of Ethereum. And that is why it was so carefully constructed. It took so long to implement was they had to get consensus about the future tokenomics of Ethereum. And that is really what Cosmos 2.0 really should be. It should be a way to basically burn more Cosmos for the sake and the future value of those who hold the Cosmos token, not what he's talking about copying Polkadot, saying that they're a success story. Polkadot and Kusama are not success stories. They are old chains that have barely delivered any value compared to what Gavin Wood said that they would, right? You don't really need to hold the Polkadot token after the auction, correct? For the parachain auction. And let's be honest, Gavin Wood is a pretty amazing, huge figure in this space. You would have thought he would have had a better implementation of the chain than what Polkadot got up to, what, 3 or 4 or 5 billion or something like this? I mean, for the most part, Polkadot has failed in many ways. There's not much going on Polkadot. And of course, see, guys in the audience, of course, he gives Jack the co-host. They always side on the side of the marketing leads.
I'm interested in talking to the engineers, not the marketing leads.
For God's sakes.
I wrote the fucking.
Well, you act like one, though. That's my point.
I've had to learn to act like one because we had a massive institutional failure in Cosmos where no one was marketing it. And I went and raised money from the Cosmos Hub and figured out how to talk to people. I wrote the relayer for Go. I wrote the testing framework for IBC. I was the product manager for the Cosmos Hub. I was the product manager for the Cosmos SDK. My code still runs on all of the Cosmos chains. So like, I am deeply technical. I can also speak the marketing lingo, but like, I understand your criticisms and I really hear where you're coming from. I'm not holding Polkadot up as an example. I'm holding Polkadot up as something that other people know about and trying to make comparisons. If you want to talk about Atom tokenomics, things like the interchain allocator and value alignment between the Cosmos Hub and new projects joining the space, that's a huge addition. There's decreased emissions in the new white paper. There's a number of things for tokenomics in the new white paper. The interchain allocator, I think, is huge. Another major feature that we'll be able to sell services to the broader interchain. But to call me a marketing person is just frankly not true.
Yeah, well, first off, like, there's almost nothing, no project that anyone builds that they talk about that they won't be called, like, they won't be like called some sort of like shiller or whatever the hell people want to call it. I think that's sort of like mostly noise. I don't really worry about that sort of stuff. I think the thing is ultimately, like, if Steve Jobs wants to talk about his products at Apple or whatever, like, that's his business. Like he can talk about him. He doesn't have to. It doesn't necessarily help to be a bad marketer about a good product either, by the way. Plenty of companies have done poorly having a half decent product, but not be able to market it well also. So I don't have any problem with that. And I think all Jack was trying to do is like compare and contrast between different types of possibilities in blockchain space, things that people have tried, maybe take some things that might be useful from some things. Like, we do this in biology all the time. Like, we'll take things like genes that are interesting for one particular thing, and then we'll use them to produce drugs for a different particular thing. So it's like you're always learning from the sort of like machinery and trying to figure out how to use other people's ideas, you know, maybe add to them sometimes, all that. So I think this is all just sort of normal evolution. I don't think there's like a like that, you know, anything to worry about from that angle. I guess I think Mayer and my question, Jack, really regarding sort of like the new sort of Atom design is like, what are the maybe the key things that were the like maybe product market fit issues or user issues or maybe like the business case? Like, what were the reasons to make the current design choices that would like ultimately make the Cosmos Hub more useful? And I'm not saying you have to be perfect in the sense that like, well, like a lot of choices get made, there may be trade-offs. There may be imperfections in the system. No one's arguing that like it'll be the best thing in the universe. But like from the eyes of the people that have been developing this, I guess, like what kinds of, you know, what are the things that you guys were going after, or the teams that were working on this, whether it's Foundation or anybody else?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. You know, there's a number of features in this Atom 2.0 design. And a key part of the Cosmos ethos is this sort of like decentralized DAO type thing. And I think that people are much more familiar with failed DAOs and ones that have just turned into sort of people bitching at each other. And I think anyone who's followed my Twitter as well as the ones of other Cosmos people have definitely seen that. But what I think folks don't see is the behind the scenes work where people are showing up in working groups every week for months, bringing features and talking through the implications of those and pushing for them to be adopted. And there's been a few dozen people who have been involved in the creation of the Atom 2.0 white paper. I think I'm a co-author on that. And what that represents is a bunch of different features that work together to help bring value to Atom the asset. And those are from different contributors throughout the ecosystem, bringing different strengths to the core development and figuring out how to make all those things work together. And that's basically what we did as a part of the Atom 2.0 work.
What do you think, and Jimmy's not here now, but
Jimmy, if you're going to throw bombs, don't run away.
Like, don't run away. But if you were to say like, what were the things right now with the Atom 2 framework, what were the trade-offs do you believe, or maybe, or challenges to the current framework? Like, what could go wrong, or maybe what would be reasons why it might not be popular as it's thought to be? Like, what have you guys thought about from that angle?
Yeah, you know, I think that there's a strong risk that interchain security doesn't become a feature that drives a ton of revenue to Atom holders. And, you know, this is why we have other features in the white paper. It's not, we're not betting everything on interchain security, which prior to the release of the Atom 2.0 white paper, we were kind of doing. It was this situation where if interchain security didn't work, then the Cosmos Hub had no utility. But with the addition of the interchain allocator, where we're doing value alignment with new projects entering the space through a form of sort of mutual loans to each other.
Come in and actually talk here.
Jimmy, go for it.
You want to say for the record that you muted us, right? And immediately made him co-host. Any reason why you muted him co-host was he muted me. And of course, started
because I wanted to hear
Jimmy, and lecturing us about who he was. Talk now because you talk for a while. Let's be very clear,
guys.
I don't want to talk to you personally, but anyway, what I want to say is, as a Cosmos holder, there are some real issues with Cosmos, right? There's the issue of the token, and I'm tired of hearing these
Jimmy,
Cosmos.
Do you like?
I'm
the new
very tired.
Jimmy, did you just hear me talking about value accrual for the Atom? Or do you just like hearing yourself talk?
Why? I'm not going to talk to you if you keep muting me. You're not a dictator. You're not even very good at marketing, to be very honest. You talk about your experiences years ago. I'm talking about today, Cosmos. I'm a practical person. People who are in this audience are practical people. We're talking about the token value. We're talking about the tokenomics of what happens. That's what we're actually interested in. And if you keep on banning about these silly marketing gimmicky terms, again and again, talk about, oh, that's an interesting question. That's such a good question. Oh, that's so amazing. Jimmy. That's a great question. Guys, we can create Cosmos spaces where he shills, and then it will be called Jack Shill Space, where he talks about what he built years ago.
I'm not.
But what about what happens to Cosmos the token in 5 years? What about the burn rate? What about the actual limited supply? What about reducing the circulating supply? What about helping to fund more validators? What about these things? Because Jack doesn't want to talk about that. For example, one of his DeFi projects,
Let him get to it.
Jimmy, I'm happy to talk about that. But there's not a lot of appetite within the ecosystem for a hard supply cap right now. I would love to see a real proposal that had backing from a number of core community members and enough stake to pass a governance proposal around a supply cap. People like yourself jump on calls and repeatedly say, well, what about a supply cap? Why don't we have one? And like, go code it up, go ship it. I'd be happy to support that if it came on the hub. But no one's actually done the work to do it. People just want to sit around and complain. And we spent the last 4 to 6 months building a 2.0 white paper that has tokenomics adjustments, has a lot of exciting new stuff in there that, you know, you are talking about as marketing and that apparently doesn't matter. And it sounds like what you want is a Cosmos hub that just sits there and does nothing and has a fixed supply. And like, frankly, that's fucking boring. Like no one wants that. There's plenty of tokens out there that have fixed supplies that have no demand because they don't have actual use cases. And what we're working on building in Cosmos is product market fit. We built product market fit for Tendermint. We built product market fit for the Cosmos SDK. We built product market fit for the IBC. We're now building product market fit for the Cosmos Hub. And if you think a part of that is a supply cap, I'd love to see you make a proposal and I'd be happy to support it.
And Jimmy, have you read the new
white paper? Can I just respond? I'm not very interested in talking to people who mute other people, right? Acting like the insecure dictator there really is. If he's asking about the actual governance proposal, let's be very honest with the governance proposal process. It's not that fair right now. And yet he talks over me. He just lectured me for 3 minutes and he muted me and he's still talking over me. This guy has a gall to do this and talk about decentralization, fair process. And all he does is mute me, right? This is ridiculous. It's absurd. And Jack, we all know in your DeFi projects, I know for SoMe Finance, for example, many of your guys were on weeks of vacation, enjoying themselves very much, having dumped their tokens on the community. I am not interested in your credibility. You have none, sir.
Jimmy,
I'm talking about the practicality of what happens today. There are so many Cosmos tokens on the centralized exchanges right now, and they don't vote on anything. It is hard to come to consensus, to be very honest. And that is just the truth of the unfair
governance proposal process in Cosmos. If you have something of this scale, you guys will get the centralized exchanges, Jimmy, to back you. And it is a shame that this happens. I'm asking the audience to do something about it. Let's have a proposal to have you shut the fuck up.
Okay. Jimmy,
I'm done listening to that, frankly.
Listen. Anyway, I guess the thing is, between the ranting here, which is always interesting with Jimmy. I don't know if he even read the Atom, the 2.0 white paper or anything. It seems kind of weird.
He doesn't seem to care about what anyone else says, and he just wants to talk over people because he can't mute them. But give Jimmy the mute button and he'll be trigger happy with it.
Yeah, no, that's probably not a good idea. So Jack, another side. So on the Atom 2 piece of the puzzle, what would be a reason why, say, for example, interchain security not being popular? Like, what would be a reason why someone would not want to have a consumer chain as opposed to spinning up a brand new one?
I think that's a great question. So when I was talking earlier about this sort of spectrum of sovereignty, like applications that require a lot less, they're going to go for a smart contract. Applications that require a lot more, they want to run on their own consensus. That middle place, there's not a lot. There's like Avalanche subnets. There's Polygon supernets. There's Interchain Security. There's Celestia. There's Ethereum rollups. There's dank sharding. And like, we can keep going on. That is a very actively competed for ecosystem. And I think that the hub has some unique selling propositions within that. But along with any sort of extremely competitive ecosystem, you're going to run into the possibility of failure. So that's what I would say is kind of the biggest threat.
Cool. Yeah. Like, oddly enough, Jimmy has periodically something interesting to say, and then periodically goes off the rails, which is very funny. I'm not really sure what the reason for that is, but anyway, in either case, the second question, Jack, I had that was, I think Mayor was bringing up earlier, is like, what are the big take-home messages from Cosmoverse? So maybe describe the implementation of the USDC and how that's going to play out. Is that a consumer chain? Is that a separate like circle?
Yeah, it's a consumer chain.
Or what? Like, who runs that? And like,
it's a consumer chain run by the Cosmos sub validators.
So what role does like Circle Corporation play in that?
Yeah. Or what was the need for a separate chain? Was it just so USDC can just issue the tokens on its own separate chain and then just use IBC and just use that as the primary stablecoin? Is that the reason for having a separate, just
everything besides use it as the primary stablecoin, I would say is accurate. You know, I think that the Circle stablecoin will exist alongside many other centralized as well as decentralized Circle stablecoins within Cosmos. You know, obviously they're a very popular one right now. It's essentially the proto CBDC in Cosmos, in crypto period, for the US government. So, you know, maybe Circle continues to be large. As far as the details on the chain that underlie that, that's currently in discussion, and I can't really say exactly how that's going to line up, but it is going to be run by the Cosmos Hub validator set, and the Circle Corporation will have control over the USDC token itself. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it definitely makes sense. And I don't think we don't need all the technical details about it. I was just curious as to, you know, it is interesting. It's going to be running on its own chain, but that we don't need the details into all that. I do think it's a very big plus and a win for the ecosystem. I also do believe that kind of what you were saying as far as Circle being very, you know, they're looks like they're going to get the seal of approval or the stamp with regulation coming down, and I particularly feel that regulation within the stable coin sphere is a positive thing for the crypto industry in general. I that is they are in the crosshairs of the regulators, and it's coming one way or another. And I think USDC coming to Cosmos is a positive thing, in my opinion.
Yeah, I strongly agree.
And it's like you said, there will be other stable coins that can compete with it. There's going to be other stable coins that are going to be backed by, you know, a basket of tokens. All that is fine. I mean, we are in DeFi, and this is a very experimental place to be. And I think if anyone wants to learn more about it, I mean, it is a matter of doing your own research. And a lot of this takes research. But then there's a lot of other people that they don't want to do their research. And you know, they just want to play around with it. But the other thing I found that was interesting about might be coming out is that, like, the ecosystem ETF. I think I heard Zaki talking about that in one of the discussions, that there's going to be maybe a token that represents the whole of the Cosmos ecosystem. Maybe like one token you could buy that would be like a Cosmos ETF token. That is interesting also, I think.
Yeah, these are the types of applications that are enabled by interchain accounts. And, you know, this is what sets IBC apart from all the other bridging solutions. You know, most of the other bridges are just designed to move tokens back and forth. But in order to really build full-featured cross-chain interoperability, you need to be able to move data back and forth. And we've gotten to this point where we're building truly asynchronous cross-chain applications before all of the other ecosystems. And this is, I think, what the core differentiator for Cosmos is in the long term. And like stuff like cross-chain ETFs is one of the first implementations there.
Jack, on a side note here, so when Circle, let's say, implements USDC on a consumer chain, will they from there be also able to help you not bridge but transfer true USDC between, say, Cosmos and Ethereum, so that it's kind of a one-to-one exchange where you're not really, there's no real bridge risk? You know, USDC is being taken on one chain and then like given on another, and it's all happens behind the scenes with the Circle people or something like that. Is there a way to sort of avoid bridges generally between Cosmos?
I think there's going to be other protocols that are going to specialize in that. Wouldn't you agree, Jack? Like, there's going to be other protocols that are going to deal with the background stuff to make the magic happen.
Sorry, I sort of misunderstood the question there. Sefi, do you mind posing that one more time?
So, you know how normally you would use many times between, let's say, I don't know, Avalanche and a Cosmos chain, you would have had some kind of bridge, right? Or between, I remember on Terra, like Lido, I think, had some bridged assets. So to avoid the bridge thing, is Circle going to be able to sort of, let's say, take your USDC on the Cosmos USDC chain, and then give you a USDC on, let's say, Ethereum, if you want to not bridge, but like just be able to move assets without an actual bridge. Like it's on their ledger in the background. They're taking one and issuing the other. Does this make sense? Like, so now you no longer have a bridge issue.
That's exactly how USDC works. You know, you can take your money from your bank account and push it down any of their pipes, whether it's to Cosmos or Ethereum or Solana. And then when you withdraw it, you can either withdraw it to your bank account or to another place where USDC is used. So USDC is essentially a bridge, a value bridge, between all of the different crypto ecosystems.
Yeah. Pepe, do you have a question?
Yeah, just I guess maybe some clarification on how, so like with it being a consumer chain, how does the governance from like the Atom side, like I get the interchain security part, what level of governance will like kind of the Cosmos Hub have over like the consumer chain in this case? Like, are they able to dictate anything for Circle and USDC to governance or no?
So the governance in the first version of interchain security has the ability to either validate a child chain or the ability to stop validating a child chain. So once the chain goes live, the option that governance would have is to stop supporting that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but they can't, for example, you couldn't like put a proposal forward on the Cosmos Hub that would like directly affect, for example, their like, I don't know, their issuance or anything like that about the chain.
No, that's, I mean, the Cosmos Hub validators could collude to run separate binaries on the Circle chain that would make changes like that, but that's not directly through governance. The only functionality that we're exposing directly through governance in the first version is the ability to sort of choose to validate or not to validate, if that makes sense.
Okay. Yeah, it does make sense. Well, I just want to follow up on that. You said in version one, could you expand upon a little bit what like version two is going to look like? I'm curious. I don't really know the full version two.
Yeah, so I mean, there's a number of different proposals for version two. Sunny's proposal around mesh security is where we want to go. Is where we want to go in the long term. So the idea there is that each chain would be able to provide security to other chains as well as purchase it from other chains in sort of a fractional perspective.
Jacob, any comments? Or you came up to speak earlier.
Oh, no, I came up to speak way back. So the thing I was going to say is about, I forgot his name. What's the guy that was?
Jimmy.
Yeah. So Jimmy's kind of weird. I don't know. I feel like that's just me. Sometimes I don't even know why we need to have him talk most of the time, but that's just me.
Decentralized finance requires decentralized mental states.
No, I know. Yeah. I understand. Yeah. I'm all for that, but sometimes they need to be an odd line, I guess.
Yeah, it's
kind of when that's all he does.
With spaces, it's always some mixture of like, you know, if the entire thing goes off the rails, like no one's interested in listening to anything. On the other hand, like if you don't let some people speak some of the time, then it's like, oh, like you're not letting so-and-so's voices being heard. There's always some BS like that's going on. So it's ultimately, like we try to give people the ability to say what they want to say.
Yeah, I get it. You should be speak. I get it. It's fine.
Yeah.
It should be there. It's decentralized. That's, you always get that.
It doesn't mean that some people aren't going to be like nails on a chalkboard. It's just how it works. But anyway. Yeah, and Jimmy's actually funny in that like he'll have really useful things to say some of the time, and other times I'm like, you know, going, wait, what? Like, what are you talking about? You know, just like going off on some tangent or conspiracy theory or some shit. Anyway, but
I joined a space one time, and it was the most Jimmy thing I've ever seen. It was a bunch of people talking about the law and crypto, and Jimmy gets on there, he makes this really great point, everybody's like applauding him. And then within 3 minutes of making this awesome point that everybody's applauding and all the hosts were like, wow, that was great. He goes so off the rails, the host kicked him. And then they spent the next 20 minutes just talking about what a loon he was.
No, it's a standard thing. It's fine. So we all just sort of like chuckle. Anyway, yeah, Jacob, do you have something else to say?
Yeah, a question for Jack. Where do you see like the DAO aspect of the chain evolve? So I feel like with DAO, there's so many things you can do with it, like NFT DAO, like token that big base DAO. Where do you see it evolve? Because I feel like at the stage of crypto grow, I feel like DAO would be more like on-chain corporation in a sense, where you could do all sorts of things. But where do you see that evolve? Because I'm really intrigued. Like I'm all about DAO and stuff.
Yeah, have you seen DAODAO yet at all?
Yeah, I'm big on DAODAO. I use it all the time for my project Multisig, and even my NFT project I'm trying to build. We'll be using it for DAO, for NFT and all. So,
awesome. Yeah, so I see the sort of chain DAOs evolving in a way a lot like DAODAO is evolving. You know, there's this top level governance. And that's kind of inherently rate limited. It's really hard to pass proposals and to sort of work through all the validators and voting there. And, you know, when we've run into governance challenges like this as humans in the past, what we do is delegate authority from that top level authority to smaller things on very discrete areas. And those look like DAOs. And exactly what that DAO is going to look like is going to depend on exactly what the problem that the particular delegates are facing. You know, for something like delegating tokens to validators, a small group of people is kind of really well placed to, like, say, delegate community pool tokens to the broader validator set. Or maybe that smaller group of people writes a smart contract that intelligently redelegates down to the down the validator set and helps encourage decentralization within the chain across a number of different parameters. It just kind of depends on what it is. But, you know, you can easily imagine things like investment DAOs or, you know, DAOs to manage different parameters on chains, a security DAO that would be able to pause transfers on certain IBC channels if there was some sort of nefarious activity found. But this ability for top-level governance to delegate and create more complex organizational structures is like absolutely where the DAO thing is going.
Yeah, that's true. And that's one thing I'm trying to do with an NFT project that I start is to create a DAO where the NFT holders control the funds. And also, because with DAO launching soon with the Valley V2, you'll be able to launch validator nodes on DAO. How hard will it be to get that done, like to launch a validator node with DAO? Because I know you guys are doing it on testnet right now. So what's like the
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, fundamentally what's happening is the validator operator address is the address of the DAO. And the DAO is just DAOs send transactions. So you just need to send the create validator transaction. It's actually not very complicated from a technical perspective and should be available soon. I think the only issue they had was there was some encoding mismatches that they had to work through on testnet before they were able to go on mainnet.
Oh, that's great. I'm excited. One more question. I know I'm thinking all the time, but
please.
Yes, with that aspect, I'm trying to build a DAO on this with my community. The name is Atlas DAO. And for me, I see a future where with that aspect, the NFT would be the DAO.
Just one second. Sorry about that.
No, you're good. So the NFT would be the access to the DAO. You're able to do vote, governance, and we have fun. The community will be able to stake.
Hey guys, sorry, I'm late for my 1 o'clock. I gotta run. Seffy, thank you very much for having
me. Oh, no, no.
Thanks, Jack.
All right,
later. Love you, Jack.
Yeah, Jacob, there's a lot happening with DAO's version.
Yeah, I know.
I just keep an eye on that.
Yeah, that's why I love. I love DAO, so I'm always there and trying.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, I think it's your questions are very, very specific. Yeah. Hey, Ryan, what's up, man?
Hello, sirs. I had a question for Jack.
He ran away.
About Astroport, and he disappeared just as I was about to ask the question, but never mind. I don't have much time. I was also going to make a comment about how sad I am to see people in Cosmos cheering along government coin coming to Cosmos. I think the only positive thing that I see in that is it's good to have a native stable coin on Cosmos rather than using bridged assets, because that takes away some of the risk, because I think the entire Cosmos ecosystem is kind of relying on Axelar at the minute. And if something was to happen to the Axelar bridge, if there was a hack, then there'd be a whole lot of trouble on chain. So I guess that's one good thing, but really kind of breaks my heart to hear people up here cheering along regulation and centralized stablecoins. Yeah.
I typically have little to no like USDC at any given moment. Just, you know, like it's purely transactional if I need it for something. But like, for example, on like a good example would be on Coinbase, you basically pay zero transaction fees for bringing dollars into your Coinbase account using USDC. And then, you know, like it's cheap to transmit it on Polygon out to, say, KuCoin. But the problem is, like, on Coinbase, the fees are obnoxious for, like, converting to, say, Atom. Just, like, really high fees, especially if it's large transactions. It's like, what the hell? I could go on vacation with those fees. It's ridiculous, like, if you're doing any large transactions. And, you know, it's so then I'll sometimes send that USDC via Polygon to KuCoin and then convert it to Atom to go to the Cosmos. So it would definitely be cheaper if we had the ability to, like, inexpensively get liquidity into Cosmos. So for some of us, it's just a pain in the ass right now. This is the problem, I think, on ramps. And so I think that part's good. Like, at the same time, like you said, you're going to wind up with a stablecoin that people have trading pairs against all over the place. And then, like, if something happens or some regulatory thing changes or some bullshit, then it puts your DeFi ecosystems at risk at one level or the other.
Yeah, if you do manage to catch Jack again on a space and I'm not here, please do ask him about what they're doing with Astroport, and if you can give any information on, because he tweeted out a few weeks ago about bringing Astroport to Cosmos. So pretty interested to hear a little bit.
Like Astroport as in its own chain, or Astroport as a?
I've got no idea. It was following the Delphi research report about finding a new home on Cosmos. And he said, you know, looking for, we obviously know Mars is going to Cosmos, but he also mentioned Astroport as well. So, yeah, I was wondering.
Yeah, and I think Mars is going to be opening sites on multiple chains, right? Like, they're going to be opening, I don't know what the name of the like, using interchain accounts, I think they're going to be able to open Mars on multiple locations, which I think makes sense, actually, going forward for projects to do that.
Hey Ryan,
starting their own chain.
I would like to just get your ideas. I mean, I hear your concern, you know, in your you know, talking about, you know, government coin as, you know, Circle being very close connection with the regulators. I mean, I think there's pros and cons to it, and I think for there to be mass adoption or more adoption into cryptocurrencies, it's, you know, regulation is inevitable, but I'd love to hear, I understand some of the concerns. I mean, it's obvious, you know, Circle can, you know, confiscate your money, you know, I mean, Circle can confiscate your coins if you're, you know, we saw that with the Tornado Cash thing. So, I mean, what are some of your concerns? Is that what it is? Just the outright control that Circle could have on your tokens, you know, being a centralized organization like that?
Yeah, pretty much nailed it, really. I mean, you know, from a philosophy perspective, we have this whole joke, are you here for the money or are you here for the tech? And honestly, like, I'm here for the tech, I'm here for the decentralization of it all. And it just kind of, you know, I hear what you're saying, you know, it's good for number to go up if we bring USDC, we bring more liquidity, we bring regulation, we bring easier on ramps, like all that kind of stuff. Like, yeah, I guess that's good for the overall value on chain, but it's just sad that we have to do it centralized.
Yeah, I think it's a delicate balance. And Seffy, we've had this discussion before about, like, when you want something to be adopted by a lot of people, it's kind of like, you know, the mobile phone things. And I think I use the reference of, you know, no one wanted cell phone towers near where they lived or wherever, but now they're everywhere. Like, there's cell towers everywhere. It's because the technology got so widespread and that the general population, you know, is going to demand it. But I also hear your concerns.
I also look at it the other way too. Like, if crypto becomes widespread enough, then regulators will be actually using crypto, which means that, like, it's basically will reach saturation one way or the other. If that actually can occur, then yeah, you have the same thing that happened with cell phones, in that for a while people were like, hey, what about this cryptography thing? Like, you know, the Apple people don't want to release, you know, the keys to the, you know, FBI or whatever, as far as getting into your cell phone when they want to, even with a subpoena. And then Apple says, well, it's not actually possible to build a code into the system that can only be secret just for the people who have a subpoena from a judge. You know, technically speaking, number one, we sell products to the entire world. Number two, like, there's no way to sort of not have someone abuse that system. And eventually politicians who use the cell phones thought to themselves, wait a minute, I don't want my other colleagues snooping on my phone conversations, et cetera. And they understood the need for security at some level. And I think that's why there's kind of a stalemate in that regard from a like regulatory perspective, even for cryptography for your smartphones, like which is way, way bigger, by the way, than any kind of cryptocurrency concern. The number of people that use smartphones who their sovereignty of their data is relevant is like orders of magnitude, like a million X more important on that front than it is with crypto. Like even if all of Bitcoin went to zero today, it would have no like comparison to what it would be if like, you know, everyone could just get into everyone else's smartphones in the world today. It'd be wicked bad, right? So there's definitely big fish to fry in this sort of thing. But I think what Ryan's point is like, yeah, like those of us who are like ideological diehards when it comes to this like libertarian sovereignty kind of concept, even Bitcoin's not particularly all that secure because it's a public ledger. So the problem is that even if you have your money, like if other people know you have it or how much of it you have, that creates a separate set of problems too.
Yeah. And I hear Ryan's concerns about, you know, central bank digital currency. That is like a Orwellian type nightmare. It's like if there is a right to privacy. That's why, you know, cash has always been like the key principle in a private interaction is if you have two consenting adults that are wanting to make a trade or barter, you know, whether it's a TV or whatever it is, I'm trying to sell you. It's like the government does not need to know about that. You know,
even in the US though, the government does even know about that too in any significant quantity. Like any transaction, like from a cash transaction in the United States now above $10,000 automatically triggers a audit with the Department of Homeland Security and like who knows the fuck else. So like
there's reasons for that. And I think a general population understands that there's reasons for that. It's like definitely there needs to be anti-money laundering laws. There's reasons for all that. There's reasons for why you don't want, you know, some illegal activity going on in your backyard. But, you know, there's trade-offs.
I just do a Sybil attack on that usually anyway. So like I'll just simply just divide up all of the into separate transactions and like do it anyway. Like when I want to do that, because like ultimately, like anyone with a brain is going to be like, well, you know, like they'll track this amount, but they won't track that amount. Oh, okay. Give me seven different checks and I'll deposit on different days or something.
I mean, you think about it, a cryptocurrency and a central bank digital currency, that's a regulator's dream. Like that is a authoritarian dream and China is implementing it right now with the digital yuan. It's like, this is something that, and I've heard a lot of Bitcoin maxis will, you know, they'll bang on the desk about this forever. It's like, you know, it's like we want, you know, we want self-sovereignty and we want to be able to change the finance system. But if people aren't active in getting it, if people aren't active in local government and state governments, it's like the regulators are going to take this thing over and use it because cryptocurrency could be a blockchain technology, could be a tool for the good, or it can be a tool for destruction in tyranny, you know. So it the technology is a tool like anything else.
I think we're preaching to the choir here on this one. Like I think all of us already sort of get this, and this is like all Ryan's saying really is just the like, I don't think we're really cheering on necessarily USDC. I think we're just cheering on the fact that like we hate bridges, and like if people are going to use stable coins anyway, I'd rather have So it's just a lesser of two evils type of deal, really.
Yeah, understood, gentlemen. I've got to run, but good to chat.
Thanks for popping in, man. And I'm gonna have to plug my phone in here pretty soon. But great conversation, Seffy, as always. And cool. I'm sure if I check out and come back for 3 hours later, you guys might still be here. So I might pop back in later.
Maybe if my wife doesn't skin me alive. But yeah. Hey, Bruce, what's up, man? you staying busy? I don't know, Bruce is like lurking or what he's doing there. Bruce. He's probably like making food or something in the background or doing something.
I heard Bruce. My name.
Yeah, what are you up to?
I was enjoying Jimmy the Osser, but when he left I kind of became depressed.
Yeah, that's why I always bring him back up periodically, just to sort of like irritate everybody from time to time. It's very important.
Yeah.
Yeah. People say like, hey, why do you always let Jimmy the Otter come and speak? Cause Jimmy's fucking crazy and I like him. That's why.
Yeah. It's troublesome though. Cause all of the founders are judging you for your association with Jimmy the Otter. You're alienating all of them. They're upset.
That's correct. Good thing. People that have been around long enough sort of figure it out. Everyone's like, oh, that's Jimmy. Hey, Euro, what's going on, man?
Hey. Just arrived in Rome. Gonna figure out what to do. I was meant to meet my family, but their flight got canceled. So gonna meet them tomorrow, hopefully. Got anything cool to do in Rome?
Oh, I don't know. What are you thinking about this like idea of making an atom validator? Like you're mentioning a little bit about it. Any theories?
No, going to do it in a few days. Just working out like the costs and stuff and how to do it, how to set it up. Jimmy's mainly going to do it. And then we've got to hustle the delegations. I need like 80,000 atom, I think. So if you can bring like 79,000 Cephi, then I can bring 1,000. And then I think we can do it.
I actually started transferring some cash over to... Because it takes a while to clear the banks and stuff here. So it takes like 10 days and stuff. So I've been moving. I have to do it like in little chunks. So working on that. So yeah, I'll get some chunk ready for that.
No, I think it's fine. Among us all, I bought another 2,000 today as well. So like among everyone, I think it's not too hard really. It's not a huge threshold. It's like $1 million total. But if you have like 100 people, you know, it's not crazy.
Oh, Bruce, Jimmy came just to talk to you.
Yeah, I know. I have his personal phone number. We're on Snapchat together.
You post like little, like fun little pictures of like maybe flowers or something to each other.
Well, I gotta say though, I'm glad that Jack Fuller is no longer one of us, the speakers.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mind Jack, but he definitely is tyrannical with the mute button.
That's not the issue, guys. The issue is that we have to reflect on what happened the last year and a half. A lot of people made a lot of money off of retail investors, right? There's a justification for that. If they have product that has good tokenomics, but you know this very well, Cosmos is known as the SDK, is not known as the ecosystem with the brand that brings business partnerships, for example. And the things that he said that he did, partially he did do them years ago, but he has a DeFi project, which also dumps on retail, sold me a finance. And, you know, they don't do very much, to be honest. It's not a very popular project. But he has transitioned to full-blown marketing, meaning that he will respond to anyone asking anything. Yes, that's a good question. Oh, that's a great question. And then he gives the same contrived responses that he would at a Medium article. He never answers the real questions. And because he can't, he is detached from reality. And you know this, DeFi, very well. A lot of these core team members at major layer ones are highly detached from the reality. And what I mean by that is this. A lot of the investors and the people who want to work for Cosmos, who really want to deliver that value, either people who want to set up nodes, right? That's value. Or people who want to improve Cosmos. Right? They can't even talk to someone like Jack in Discord. He won't even have time for people like this. How many AMAs does he do where he gets the town hall of engineers on Cosmos and asks them or talks them for hours how he can improve Cosmos? You know he doesn't do that. So those are issues that should be talked about, but he wouldn't do that because he's a coward.
Bruce, your sense of this?
What?
I don't know, man. It hurts my heart when anyone argues. Yeah, like if anyone has a point of view or a mental identification that's slightly different from another person, it just makes me upset. And I tend to kind of, I don't know, shrivel away.
In the fetal position in the corner, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I've always been highly agreeable. It's always upset me a lot if anyone has...
Would you agree that you are an idiot?
I would say that's a large part of it, yeah. That's a large part of it.
Right. Well, we can take that with your own words and let's leave it there. It's stuck to the wall. Let it stick there then. But We need to reflect at some point in the Cosmos ecosystem where the token goes. It should be more than just the SDK and the name brand.
All right, Jimmy. So what do you propose?
Get real companies, onboard them, spend as much time as possible talking to these companies, especially gaming companies. Spend those dollars in the treasury, getting the people that Polygon got. You know, you have to admit, Polygon, for example, got Robinhood, right? So it is possible. You know this, right? Robinhood is now implementing its marketplace on Polygon. Whenever a partnership like that comes, that is an opportunity lost. And Polygon is not better than Cosmos. It is not at all. But these people are living on their laurels of the SDK. They're living on that brand that they built from years ago. And you say, oh, we're not competing with each other. Man, there are only some, in the United States at least, there are only a certain number of Robinhoods out there that you can get as a partner. That's the truth.
Well, that guy, Vlad, with Robinhood, he actually was he was an investor early in Terra, actually, interestingly. I think he had some theories for how he might utilize that system, you know, within like Robinhood or whatever the hell. And I think that got wrecked. So it wasn't that they weren't doing anything related to Cosmos related chains, but not Cosmos Hub specifically.
I don't think that's really the issue. I think the issue is BD, right? Business development, getting those partnerships in there. And maybe that would have been a good starting point. I don't think he would have been scared off of the fact that Terra was built on Cosmos, right? And that's not a thing to be worried about. I think the issue is having friendships and partnerships. You know them very well. Having dinners, talking to people like him, being his friend. And Polygon has, in my opinion, this is just my personal opinion, Polygon has the same brand recognition as Cosmos. I think it does. I mean, if you would ask anyone in Silicon Valley about Cosmos, the blockchain, people would say good things, just like they would about Polygon at the equal level. It's just a question that you know very well. Polygon has a lot of BD people, a lot. They're not going to spaces blowing smoke up their own bottoms. They're going out there into the world, competing. And Polygon competes. You have to give Polygon props on that, too. They do compete very well.
Yeah, I mean, well, Cosmos SDK, the way that it's set up is like pretty much a large giveaway in many ways. It's not really designed. It wasn't designed to necessarily bring any.
That's the transition reflection. It's really
meme value back to the original coin, but it didn't really have a like definitive use case or anything like that for sure. Like the Cosmos Hub, I mean.
Well, you could say the same about Polygon now, right? It was a layer 2 of Ethereum. The fees are very low, by the way. You know this very well. They're not using Polygon token for the layer 2, right? So, but the thing is that they got enough funding and enough cash burn, I guess, for years now, that they were able to hire these BD people and get them out to the world and build partnerships. And that's what he should be talking about, right? And if I had asked him about this, this is the same thing they always say, by the way. These scammy, you know, fake core devs who are actually just advisors because they're friends of the people in the core team, right? Oh, we're doing that. I had a lot of conversations with who? I can't say right now. We're doing that. He's an advisor. He doesn't actually work for the core team. He didn't build shit.
Yeah.
But you know that's what he would say, right? If I would ask him these questions, if I wouldn't get muted, his response would be, oh, we're doing that. Of course we're doing that. He wouldn't give any exact specifics about what he was doing, though.
How do you think you should punish Jimmy? Like, if there was a medieval torture device, like, what would it be?
What? I don't see that has any relevance to what I said.
Like a rack in, what do you call it, the rack, or maybe drawn and quartered?
The brazen bull, we talked about that before.
Well, I get what you're trying to do, Coach. You know that I'm right. You're trying to reduce the tension by attempts at irrelevant humor. I get that. But at the same time, a lot of people got wrecked with Cosmos. They've lost a lot of their token value. And Polygon, that's not been true. Polygon, how far is Polygon from all-time high? 50% down? It's not bad.
Actually, Adam's at a 15x from 2000. That's pretty damn good.
Well, if you go back far enough, Polygon's also done pretty well, too.
2000's only, I mean, compared to most coins, done a lot better.
Okay, well, the same could be. What about BNB, then? BNB is what, 1,450x since it started. I can go into these games too. It's ridiculous. What about the future? Be pragmatists. The question is what we do now. What?
Trying to debate and think about what Coach was making up over there to drink.
Well, this is kind of the problem of the United States right now. We have alcoholics everywhere. It's a shame. Our society is certainly going downward. Yeah, what we have right now are low effort, low productive, low energy people. I mean, look at the speakers in this space.
You realize you're a speaker, right?
Well, I've been away from the space for most of the time after I got muted by that man, Jack, twice. Cannot say that I started the space, nor can I say that I'm the host of the space. And as the host, I would expect you feel obligated to do something.
You said, look at the speakers. And there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 speakers.
Okay, I am technically a speaker. I'll wait until someone brings up something interesting.
Thanks for checking out another episode of The Ether. That was part one of a three-part Chepe Space Cosmos Open Discussion. Recorded on Thursday, September 29th, 2022. For TerraSpaces.org, I'm Finn. Thanks for listening. Sneaking through back alleys on a little cosplay. Broadway all day, looking like the wrong way. Resuscitating major players in the waiting room. Sifting through the paperwork while I be debating fools. Breaking rules, breaking bad, like we always wait for doom. Slayed a few in my early years off beneath the shroom. Sitting in the dark, waiting for the daily news to let us know what we should believe as the latest truth. Stay aloof, writing rhymes in the studio. Trying to keep it well lit like filming a movie role. Sorting through support from your endorsements. Of course, we're tripping balls, handing reports in. The latest proof ain't a way to move, change the view. Just a bunch of pack of heads living in a chicken coop. Picking at the dinner, finger licking like the plate is good. So kick it for a minute, then show me what that thing could do. 2 plus 2. Show me what that thing could do. 2 plus 2. Show me what that thing could do. 2 plus 2. Show me what that thing could do. 2 plus 2. Big thinking energy always gets the best of me. When I kick it in the lab, messing with new recipes. Gotta mix and mash, flip the latch, letting rhythm scratch. Dope shit, spitting facts with my vision smashed. Big drip aristocrats, dishing out a list of trash. Missing wisdom, this fish is too big to catch. Better let the missus know where you hid the stash. Watch your next step, bro, before you hit the traps. Walking on eggshells, tripping over landmines. And I'm about done dealing with these damn lies. Man, I'm looking at this planet like a franchise. Chastised into digging holes in the back nine. The latest proof ain't a way to move, change the view. Just a bunch of peckerheads living in a chicken coop. Picking at the dinner, finger licking like the plate is good. So kick it for a minute, then show me what that thing could do. 2 plus 2. Show me what that thing could do. 2 plus 2. Show me what that thing could do. 2 plus 2. Show me what that thing could do. 2 plus 2. Terra Spaces.